Hello and welcome to Nerd Runners. I'm Steph, and joining me, as always, is a man who's just off of his sellout tour of Wildside. It's Mark.
Oh man, they're going crazy for my turntable skills.
Oh god. Hi Mark, how are you doing?
How is that bad? Like, you started it by saying Wildside.
Alright, that's my bad. How are you?
You're an enabler, Steph.
I am. I'm a terrible enabler. Anyway, Mark, how are you? Are you good?
I'm very good, thank you, yeah. Crazy busy at work. The fun never stops. So much testing to do, but it's really good.
Got cool.
lots more top secret stuff that I wish I could talk about.
Seriously,
I know you hate me. Literally, one of the hardest things about my job is trying to remember what's been announced and what hasn't been announced and what games I can talk about. Because there's stuff that I find out that we test quite early on before it's ever revealed to the public, and they get their hands on it and stuff like that. And obviously it's awesome, but at the same time it's like, oh shit, I know about this really awesome game and I can't tell anyone about it.
I'm just going to say it's collective for everyone out there. No one cares about how you feel. We just want to know the facts, and you're a lying bastard. If anyone's listening from Sony, he doesn't tell us because he's a dick. And also doesn't abuse his NDAs. So keep him employed, I suppose, is the main takeaway from this.
Yeah, I need my job.
Oh, God.
London's expensive.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
How are you, Steph?
I'm not great. No, I've been... So, there's been a delay in podcasting, again, due to sickness. We tried to record a week ago, and we couldn't get Skype to work, and there was a horrible lag. But by the same merit, I am on some fairly hefty medication at the minute, which has been pretty much wiping me out most of the day. So I'm kind of... I'm getting better. I've got another review. I'm responding well to medication, which is what the doctor said, which is nice. but yeah, if things are a bit spotty, I'm sorry. It is all my fault. And even I couldn't have seen this coming. So we'll hopefully resume regular Nerdrunners content now, because I can actually talk and I'm not asleep. And I'm on half the medication I was, which is great, because I can walk around again. but yes, that's what I've been doing. Pretty much, lying in bed, playing Shadowrun when I can make it to the PC. Because XCOM 2 isn't out yet, so, you know, I've got to do something. And playing some games on Jinteki, which has been fun. I've had some very... it's kind of hit and miss with who you get on Jinteki. As a whole, people are genuinely quite nice on there, as it is with most of the Netrunner community. But occasionally, you just get some dicks. So I've been playing with Julianne, because my Julianne Jinteki deck, which is all the death, all the time, and gives people nightmares...
I finally beat it, so I feel like all the tension and pressure is gone. It's like, you I can let go of this now.
You're in the top two players I've ever played to beat the Julianne Jinteki deck. And again, mad props to Chuffbot, because, hey, he started this trend. I just refined it, and I'm still using it, because it's fun to screw with people.
I completely survived the most wanted list.
Yes, and that's the thing. I'm playing it because it survives the most wanted list. There's nothing in there, I don't think, that is actually on the most wanted list at all. I played against someone the other day who... He was winning. He was winning fairly convincingly. It was a 6-0 at one point, and then I scorched him, and he quit, and then immediately started another game. So he quit without saying goodbye, which I thought was like, hey, you know, maybe he's got to be somewhere. He immediately started another game saying, MWL training, no jank, please. I'm like, there's nothing janky about my deck.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
No, it's so
good.
Like,
perfect's hard to say, but, you know.
The thing with your deck, with your Jinteki Biotech deck, is... You'll just obliterate the hand size every time you can, and if the runner's ever on one card or less, you flip your identity, because it's always a 2 net damage.
Yep.
And they're probably going to get a tag through, was it Cerebral, cast or
cast,
snare, bunch of other stuff that you have, and then you just scorch people.
Yep.
Because they've probably killed a lot of their hand size from your net damage anyway.
And it's full of ancestral images now, so if you leave, you take some net damage. If you stay, you're going to take some net damage. It's a solid deck, and I'm still really enjoying playing it, and it's kind of my go-to, because I've not been feeling particularly, you know, well. So playing something I'm very familiar with is very nice, and yeah, it still wins a lot of games. Yeah. And it's important to know with this deck that you're never safe.
Oh,
and all it takes is one mistake, and I just sit there and like, there it is, cool, by now. same with you the other day. You were going really, really well. The second game, not the one you won. The one you won, actually, was masterful playing, I have to admit. I was very impressed by how you did.
It was all a haze. What did I do? I've forgotten.
You were just... Yeah, I think... Were you playing with Max?
No, I was... it was Leader. Kim deck.
Oh, no, it was Kim. Yeah, you were just... it's because you got rid of my Scorches and you got rid of most... Cause it's very operations heavy.
Yeah.
So it does fall down to Kim. But, yeah, you were just... You were very sensible, which is unlike you. And...
Well, the thing... Because I think I got an early lead against you. And... Because I went to a tournament recently and did badly. So we'll breeze over that. But let's... Well... The moral of the story was taking a fairly untested Kentenma deck and a fairly untested Foundry deck to a tournament before Most Wanted list kicked in, where all the top players and Darksphere posted the top 10 players deck lists. Half of the players were running prepaid Kate as their runner, and about half of them as well were running food coats, and the other half were like harp kill decks.
Hooray! So it's just like,
yay, conformity. So, obviously the floor, I got my ass kicked. I mean, to be fair, they played those decks really well. The decks are great. That's the problem. But the thing that I learned, because I made a few really dumb mistakes around game 3 out of 6, which is where I was kind of settling into the lower bracket, and again got a, because with Ken you can get ahead quite quickly, and it's just the lesson I really took away from that is, if you're getting ahead and say you're on, I don't know, 5 points and you think the corporation's going to score a government takeover, don't run it, because it's going to be a 6 advanced Junebug and you'll die. So wait it out and do something else. That actually did happen. So gutted. I kind of learned don't rush if you're ahead to close out the game, because you have time. You have all that time that the corp is going to need to catch you up to stabilize, especially if you've done a lot in the early game. You probably don't have a lot of your rig out, so you can stabilize and then go back in kind of a tour de force finale and kind of do what you can to close out the game then, and rather than rushing, getting sloppy and losing that lead to silly mistakes. Yeah. So that's kind of what I took, and that's kind of why I was playing like that against you, because I was like, right, I think I must have got like a fetal, and I think, yeah, maybe a few one pointers from you. And I was just like, I've got some points. I know Steph primarily scores out one pointers with Mushin if he does. I think I have time. Just take it steady, make one dedicated runner turn, draw up all the time, and yeah, just it's quite good. But no, yeah, your biotech deck is just bonkers good.
Yeah, and it's gonna get better with new cards coming out, and
oh yeah.
I'm still very much enjoying just looking at things coming out of the Mumbad cycle, going, I can fit that in there. I can fit that in there. I can fit that in there. And yeah, it's pretty nifty. And then on the other side, when I've been playing on Jinteki, I've been playing a kind of Edward Kim MWL kind of test deck with Vigil and just trashy things, really. And I kind of nicked it from the one arm Ice Bandit on Netrendex, I can't remember who made it. I'll have a look for that and I'll come up with it in a second. But yeah, it's been pretty good. I do definitely enjoy playing Anox more than anything.
Yeah.
You know what? It's just what it is, really.
Yeah. I've always enjoyed runners that disrupt the corp and throw them off kilter, especially with Anox, where you can just trash stuff, and you can run into HQ, trash everything. You can run into R&D, dig super deep. You can, you know, destroy their ice. You can destroy their assets and upgrades with Scrubbers and Wizard. And it's just... the corp is just not safe with an Anarch deck around.
Oh, the guy who made it is Herod 1204. So, there you go. If you wanted to have a look. And, you know, we'll probably post that in the notes. It's only fair to give him his due, because it's been fun. It's been fun playing him. It's the 1.6 version of it. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun just kind of running and smashing things, really. But yeah, I need to branch out. I was thinking the other day that things I haven't ever really played were criminal decks. So I tried a Kentenma deck and I was really bad at it.
Yeah, there's some new cards coming out that I think are going to make Ken more popular again. Mm-hmm. Well, I've seen him popping up quite a bit in these in kind of tournament winning deck lists on Netrunner DB recently, so I don't know why he seems to have got a sudden resurgence, but I'm quite happy for that. Cause
I think it's just because he's easy to play, I think. Like, it's easy to run lots.
Yeah.
It's hard to master, and I think maybe people have just been playing him for a while, and they're like, oh, cool, now I'm actually winning something.
I wonder as well if the now Desperados on the Most Wanted list, people are starting to look at Doppelganger more and think, oh, that actually goes well in Ken, I'll play him.
Yeah.
And I honestly do wonder if that's part and parcel of the reason for it. Either way, I'm glad Ken's getting a bit more airtime.
Bit of love.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's other than that, I've just been taking medication and generally feeling sorry for myself. So
I'm waiting for XCOM 2.
Oh god, it's just, you know what, it's very easy to play video games when you're not feeling great because you just have to sit in one place.
Yeah.
And have beaten everything else. So now I'm just playing Shadowrun Hong Kong, so I beat the other two Shadowruns and so X comes out Friday. Woo! Not in all weekend. Woo! Damn it.
Yeah. Man, you timed that badly.
Yeah, well, you can't really time illness.
That's true.
But either way, what have you been playing?
I've been playing a mixed bag of stuff. So, like I said, I took Ken and the Foundry to the tournament a couple of weeks ago at Darksphere. It was a store championship, and it attracted about 90 people, I think. So it was basically like a nationals. there was so many people there. It was ridiculous. I've never seen so many Netrunner players in one place. And there were the kind of Netrunner celebrities. So there's kind of like Laurie Poulter, who's been to like every store championship in the world, more or less. Well, actually,
naturally.
Just in the UK. Plus, he's also the Greek national champion. Because why not go to Greece for their nationals if you can?
Yeah.
Alex White was there, and who else?
I don't know who that is.
Alex White is the UK national champion.
Cool. Thank you. I genuinely have been so out of Netrunner stuff for a while.
That's okay. I have a slight claim to fame. I don't know if I mentioned this on the podcast. No, I
probably not.
I wouldn't have because of the timing of when we recorded. But last year, it was before the UK nationals. I had no idea who he was. And he was testing his decks for nationals, and they were prepaid Kate and RP, I think, at the time. Uh-huh. And I destroyed his RP deck with my max deck that I'd taken to the tournament. I don't think I milled him out, but I think I destroyed him with Keyhole. And then, like, 2 weeks later, he goes on to win the UK nationals with that RP deck. And I'm sitting there, kind of quietly smug, going, huh. I beat that with my janky max deck.
Such an arsehole.
That's my mini claim to fame, besides, you know, doing a podcast that's heard around the world. So they were...
Are we heard around the world?
Yeah, we've got, like, Canadian and Australian and American.
Close enough!
that's a lot of the world. And people who've written in who don't put their location, so we don't know where they are. But I'm assuming we're kind of global. We're a global podcast.
Yes.
they didn't fare very well at the tournament, and, you know, in typical tournament style, after six games and an entire day of playing them, I was kind of sick of seeing them. I didn't test them as much as I should have done. Uh-huh. Foundry was all kind of meant to be like a fast next deck, and with executive boot camp, but I barely kind of got boot camp off the entire day, so I wasn't
resing my eyes. I was
going
to say, how did that work out for you?
I think the main time I used bootcamp was to go fetch a Jackson to stabilise after getting a Gender Flooded.
Yep.
Rather than using it for its intended purpose. And Ken was all the run events, and I would have done a lot better with Ken had about, let's say, 15 of about 17 Maker's Eyes not completely missed. Nearly every single Maker's Eye run I made, I saw just like nothing but like ice and operations. Just like, fuck's sake. Just barely scored a single thing off Maker's Eye all day. It was just so bad, which is just really, really unlucky. So then I sleeved them up and thought, you know, I'll play something else. So I kind of put together a Kim deck, which was like the one you trounced me when I was testing my Foundry deck against you with the cutlery.
Hooray!
And I played it for about 3 or 4 weeks now, actually, but it was. It was basically a kind of a fuck you to the Most Wanted list, because it was using 2 Yogg, 3 Parasite, and 3 Clone Chips to take up most of my influence, which was quite fun. And yeah, I really enjoyed playing that. Kim trashing operations is great. It struggles when there are asset heavy decks, but you know, that's where the horrible Kim wizard dichotomy comes in of, you're going to pick one, the meta will swing the other way, you go pick the other, the meta swings back.
Yep.
So you're always out of it. But no, yeah, the only thing
you're
I found
prepared.
That, you're never prepared. But the only thing I found with that was that I never really used the cutlery at all. I think I had two of each of them to start with, and I was predominantly just using Parasite and Clone Chip to just win tons of data suck encounters to kill the ice, and never the cutlery.
I found that as well. Like, having the cutlery, it makes me stop and think, I should wait to use this cutlery at the most opportune. And then you just like, oh, I've wasted time. I could have just parasited, data suckered, and got rid of that piece of ice already if I'd been canny about it. But I get focused on the stupid cutlery.
Yeah, I mean, there's we won't go into Caligado until next week, in 2 weeks' time. But yeah, Run Amok, I think, is a good kind of cutlery substitution, because if they res the ice, it trashes. Mm. If they don't res it, you get in, and the ice wasn't resed. So, hey. So I think that could be kind of a nice cutlery alternative. But yeah, it was always in my hand. And less cards, too. But yeah, it's just always in my hand, and I'd never use it, and then I never had the right breaker to use the right piece of cutlery that I had, and I didn't get on with it super well. But just running early with Data Sucker, then I could just parasite in anything and destroy ice straight away was kind of fun. and then Corpse Side, I was playing a Harp Kill deck for a little for about 3 weeks, which was all of the tagging, all my influence on Scorched Earth and Traffic Accident, and this was kind of like the opposite of my Kim deck, where it was using none of the most wanted cards. And it's just, what the agendas were, like Breaking News, Exploded Palooza, Beal, Quantum Predictive, which is hilarious when the runner just keeps scoring them for you. And it's even better when the runner scores it for you, and then you can sacrifice it for the 24/7 news cycle, and then tag them and kill them. And it was their own doing, because they ran well tagged. And then news team is disgustingly good. It's so brutal. Like, it's brilliant. Like, runners will... Or either, in early game, runners like, straight away, all right, -1. Don't care, -1. Mid to late game, if you've landed a few tags, it's just like, fuck it, I'll take the tags. I'll be further tagged. What's the point of taking another minus agenda point at this point? But the fact they go into archives, so if... The best thing about it is you put it in a server, goad them into running on it, they access it, they're like, oh, fuck it, all right, I'll just take the tags and clear them or something like that. Or then they trash it, goes into archives. They run archives later, they hit it again.
Yeah.
And it's just so mean. And
it's the kind of thing that you just leave out. It's like, okay, you can deal with that card on the table now.
Yeah.
It's still there. It's annoying, and it's a server.
And my favorite thing as well was after a couple of news teams are in archives, especially news teams they don't know about, just jacksoning a lot, dumping loads of cards in there to signal, hey, look, run on this, because there's agendas in here. Jacksoning all the agendas, bar maybe like 15 minutes or Exploded Palooza, just so you can either get money or click it back, or Quantum if they're tagged. And then they just take all the news teams again. Oh, it's so fun. But I was finding it was getting to be a real slog, primarily because, I don't know, I think runners are now... Everything's meat damage again, so runners are really... Like, one game I lost because Kathy put out 3 Plascretes. It's like, fuck.
Oh God.
No, I'm not scoring past that. I'm not killing you past that. And it becomes a bit of a slog, because you need a Breaking News scored. You need another agenda scored. You need to have a Scorched Earth and a Traffic in hand. You need them to not be Anarch, because they'll definitely have... I've had worse. You'll need, just be able to try and pull off the kill. Runners will clear the tags, or they'll just play around it, or they'll get Plascrete out, and... Once runners are really starting to defend against the tags, and the killing really is the primary win condition, it's just so difficult to try and score out. It's like the Harp is brilliant if you can get an early lead, if you can score behind some cheap Ender and Ice, and get a few points on the table, because there is no way you can beat Harp in an agenda race if they have a lead, because you can score out quicker than the runner can take points from you. The best thing about Harp as well is if you're on 5 points and the runner's on 4 points, you just put out 2 agendas. Like two Beals, where you put out a Beal and a Exploder Palooza and advance the Exploder Palooza once. It doesn't matter. Next turn you've won, regardless of which one they steal, because with Harp, you can't steal more than one a turn.
Hey.
Except for Film Critic as well, completely shuts down this deck.
Well, yeah, but you know what? People banged on about Film Critic, including me.
Yes.
I haven't really seen it that much. I still use it quite a lot, but
yeah.
I haven't really seen it in the wild.
Yeah. We have it quite a bit in the London meta, but even then it's a bit hit and miss. It's not like it's the one of in a Shaper deck, if anything. It's kind of how I see it at the moment, or how I see it's being played at the moment. But yeah, again, like, I think with the Harp Kill deck, and if you don't get around to landing the mid-season tags, or if they're playing around and if or breaking your Data Raven and Gutenberg and stuff like that, then you're really screwed and you can't tag them, you can't kill them. Scoring out's hard because most of your ice is completely porous or not very taxing if the runner has their Corroder out or their Barrier Breaker. Guess I shouldn't generalize. and yeah, stuff like it's just. News team was fantastic in it. Probably Corroder though, isn't it? Yeah. no, yeah. It just became very, very difficult to score and score out if you had to. And again, it's you need the early kill with that kind of deck. You can't let the game go on too long because once the runner starts getting set up, and especially if they're Anarch and they start holding I've had worse in hand, like I think I played a game where every time I did any amount of meat damage to the Anarch I was playing against, they just had I've had worse in hand. I was just like, how many do you have? I think they kept recurring it with Deja Vu as well. So I sleeved that back up a couple of weeks ago, and I've been trying out my super fast NEH team sponsorship Turtlebacks deck, which I think I talked about way, way long ago. But the most annoying thing about that was it's completely hit by the most wanted list. So this was kind of a I was getting a bit tired of how long the Harp games are going, so I thought, you know what, I'll go back, I'll play a really fast deck. Went, found this, it's like, oh shit, right. Well, I got to get rid of those NAPDs. It had 3 NAPDs, 3 Astro, 3 Sansan, 2 Architects, and I don't think it had Eli, but it might as well have had Eli for what it was worth. So it's completely screwed me over, because the influence is still 3 on Astro and 3 on Sansan with the most wanted influence, because I was thinking of taking this to a tournament soon, so I'm trying to play with the list. But then you left with not much with 3 on Turtlebacks, 3 on team sponsorship, and then I think you end up with maybe 5 influence after that, and you go down to 2 if you want the NAPDs back in. Yeah. So I don't know. It's either wins really quickly or it loses really quickly, which is kind of nice either way because it means I can have more games in an evening. But people are just so... Because I remember when I first started playing this deck was before anyone really knew the power of Turtlebacks or team sponsorship.
Yeah.
And people would just go, oh, that's an interesting 4 trash cost card. I'm going to leave that because I don't care about it because I want my money. Literally every game I've been playing recently, whether it's on Jinteki or at the London meetup, people just trash everything. So much so I removed Diversified Portfolio from the deck.
It's just the safest thing to do, though.
Yeah. I can't rely on having servers anymore because people exactly. trash. I don't know, it's difficult because a lot of the runners I've played against have ways of getting their economy back quite quickly, whether it's siphoning me or having Magnum Opus out or doing the whole Anarch Liberated account stuff, so people tend to get their money back quite quicker than I can recover financially as well. So while even though I thought it would be like an economic drain on them, it's just not working as well as I thought it would. People trash team sponsorship before like even an agenda is threatening them, so it's completely off the table and in the bin before I can score anything out to pull things out of the bin, which I can't do because of trash team sponsorship. And it's just, and then Turtlebacks is becoming painful because I either don't see it or it gets trashed before I can do anything with it. So I'm not getting the money I thought I would from installing new remotes. So I've had a lot of games where I've been incredibly slowed down because I've just not been drawing assets or all my assets have trashed and I'm not server spamming like I expected I would.
Like you used to.
Yeah. Which is a shame, really, because I really used to like that deck, so I think I might try something else soon, but...
Well, you know, decks change, times change.
They do.
It was fun for a while, but even I stopped playing it, it was...
Yeah, I think it would be... I think this is a deck that benefits more from playing in a casual build, I should say. Because then you can put the Architects back in, obviously Architects are fantastic for this deck. And NAPD as well. I mean, I don't know. Exploder Palooza does the same kind of job, if not maybe slightly better. The deck was primarily about making the runner poor or making the runner unable to spot. And as well, yeah, because everyone's trashing everything, I can never sneak out an agenda amongst tons of servers anymore.
No.
I think the most servers I've had recently in a match was probably against you. That's because you weren't trashing anything. You were the anomaly.
I didn't have any money. Oh, my money was at the bottom of my deck.
Oh, it was, wasn't it? Yeah.
Oh, God. 5 money cards. My God, the RNG in that is ridiculous at times.
And then the last deck I've been playing recently is I decided to go back to Leela because I've just been 3 weeks of Edward Kim, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to play some blue because I've not done that for a while, and Leela's probably my favourite criminal because she fucks with the corporation ice-wise, and I always like runners that mess with ice and mess with the corp, so...
Yeah.
That's why I'm a fan of Quetzal, because you just get through barriers, and soft spot for Kit because you make some code gates and stuff like that. Or but no, yeah, Leela with her bouncing, and she's just so good, still so good. And, like, I've kind of got a semi-endless waltzy style build, because if you're going to build a Leela deck, that's kind of the framework you use, because it has all the good events and all the good breakers.
Yeah.
Except I'm kind of using Rex as more a primary code gate breaker than anything else, because I was getting a bit frustrated with Passport, because the thing I like about Leela, or the thing I liked about the deck archetype more, was that I could run anywhere, whereas yeah. with a lot of Anarch decks I've played recently, it struggles, because either Faust is blocked out through an AI hate card, or you don't have the data suckers to blow the ice strength, so your Mimic or your Yogg can't get through stuff. That's why I kind of preferred Rex to Passport. But I also have a Zoo in there just in case, because that's like a nice kind of code gate breaker, not too much influence. The only annoying thing is that there are just games where I really struggle against Big Ice, because if they can get something like an Archangel rezzed, that's super expensive for me to get past, and if I don't have the money, if they've like shut off my security testing runs and stuff like that, or as in a lot of games, my Desperado just never showed up. So yeah, you really struggle for money sometimes, and then an Archangel becomes, it's what I think 6 to break with a Zoo, and you just don't have that money to keep running. And I've got a really good Archangel based story, which I'll talk about when we get to the reader mail later on. But no, yeah, I've been really enjoying Leela, and just there are so many of the games I played with her recently have just been within the first 2 or 3 turns I'm on 5 points and the corp has no ice out, and it's just like turn one sneak door, steal a few agendas.
Fuck your sneak door. Fuck your sneak door.
It's so good, but the only problem with turn one
just
sneak door
irritating.
Is you have no money unless you have a gamble in hand as well.
I was just praying whenever you hit it, it's like hit a snare, just hit a bloody snare on your first go. That would be the funniest thing.
Yeah.
What? Because your usual thing would be okay. First turn, what was it? You'd play, Shore Gamble.
Yeah.
And then Sneak Door, run. And I was just like, just hit it on your last one, because I would wipe you out and I'd win the game in the first turn.
So, well, actually,
first go, flip card.
It's funny you should mention that. There was
second go technically, but hey.
I was playing against a guy. Scott, I think his name was. Sorry if I've got that wrong. The other night, and he was, I think he pretty much just had the core set and running HB. And so I'm hammering his R&D. I have 2 cards in hand, and would you believe it? I hit a snare. And it's just like, oh, I forgot the core set does this. I forgot people splash snare in HB when you have just core set cards.
It's because it's like, the best.
I know. I was saying, like, well done. Like, honestly, that's a great play. Like, you caught me off guard. You killed me. You won on turn 3. But no, it's really good. The only change I've made, I think, since you last saw it, Steph, is I've put in a 3 gang sign.
Oh yeah,
because it's just I had HQ interface in there for a while to help enable the gang sign to hit more cards. But with 3 gang sign, you're probably going to see 1 or 2, and then you get 2 picks into HQ anyway, or 1 pick if you just have 1, I guess. But yeah, it's just for like if I'm starting to get locked out, I can throw down a couple of gang sign, and then if the corp is starting to score, I can just start getting into HQ, and then maybe that way bounce something to enable my next turn to do something big and crazy. But it doesn't have any of the other kind of gang signy related cards that you'd normally see, like turntable and HQI. Decided to go back to legwork because it's just my theory. Actually, yeah, this would be interesting. I was talking about this the other day. My theory with it is that with R&D, because it's a much more random place, once you have an R&D eye out, it's the corp is kind of more okay with it. But if you have a HQ eye out, then the corp is going to play around that a lot more because they know what's in HQ, they know if there are agendas there and stuff like that. Whereas swapping out for a legwork means that you can suddenly surprise the corp, and they might be completely like trying to hide 2 agendas in hand, but if you had HQI out, they might be playing around that a lot more. But that's just my recent theory.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's more random in R&D generally just because there are more cards, but
yeah,
by the same merit, depending on the deck you're building, like I tend to have I hold a couple of traps in my hand just as a general rule, just so that, well, I'm running the God trap thing, what's it called, the fox-tailed,
oh, Kitsune,
that's it, I run Kitsune, so it's, you know, you hit that and you're like, okay, just you have to access this
yeah
this snare now. Sorry.
Well, I don't think I'd play a legwork or put the gang signs down against the Gentechi deck. Just, yeah. Oh, you just scored an agenda. Okay, access snare, okay, I'm dead.
Yeah. Damn.
Yeah. But no, I really like it at the moment. I think I'm going to take it to a tournament soon. And I think I've got a store championship coming up where there's a Leela playmat. So winning that with Leela would be quite nice.
Yes. Well, good luck to you.
Yeah, hopefully. It seems to be doing okay at the moment. And again, she's just so explosive. Like, if you can get a couple of agendas in the first turn, you either win that quickly, or then you do, like I was saying, you kind of take your time, you stabilize. The corpse probably 5 points behind at this point, and then you just kind of take your time, get what you need, go in again. And win the game. Mm. Cool.
Right, well, should we move on to our topic for this week?
Yeah, let's do that.
So, we were going to talk a little bit about influence.
Mm-hmm. So, it's something I've been thinking about a little bit since the Most Wanted list came out, because obviously that kind of acts as an influence kind of in itself. That's now in-faction cards have influence, or these specific out-of-faction cards have an extra influence, so like a clone ship becomes 3 influence out of Shaper, or it's 1 influence in Shaper.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I just thought it'd be kind of interesting to have a chat and talk about kind of how we play around with influence in our decks, what we tend to use it on. Do we always try and play to max influence and stuff like that? Because I know a little while ago, yep, you were saying that you often find yourself will be like 4 influence short and be like, yeah, I'm all right with this.
I try where I can. I mean, it depends. You know, it's nice to use up the influence that you need.
Yeah.
But if there is a way of doing it, especially with the Most Wanted list out now, if there's a way of doing it without spending it, then I just go with that. You know, I tend to go with my gut. Obviously, if I can cram in a few more Shaper cards for Anarchs, that's usually, you know, I'll throw another clone chip.
Yeah.
But, yeah, as a general rule, I tend to try and work towards it, but it's not like a complete loss if I don't. Whereas I know with you and your rampant OCD that you have to have all the numbers filled to exactly the right point.
I do like to have it completely filled, yes. It's a problem.
I mean, you are a better player than me as well, so that could also be why.
Well, I think that's probably just because I have more time to play than you, so...
No, that's true, that's true.
I do get the more practice in. But no, one of the ways I was thinking is... Because I know that, again, I don't want to get too much into Kalagoda just yet.
I'll go into it. We'll do a full cover next week.
I was going to talk a little bit about Mongoose, because I've put that into my Leela deck.
Because that's all you've been talking about for the last 2 days.
It's an awesome breaker. Well, I think it's an awesome breaker anyway.
It's fairly good,
and
I
especially
have to admit.
In Criminal, where you probably have a fairy down anyway, because for people who don't know, Mongoose is a new Criminal breaker. It's 3 to install, 1 MU, starts at 1 strength. It's 1 credit to break up to 2 Sentry subroutines, which is great, and 2 credits to pump by 2. So it gets a bit annoying if you're against like a 2 multiple of 2 strength thing. So if it's a 4 strength, then yeah, you're kind of screwed a bit. But the main drawback for Mongoose is you can't use Mongoose to break subroutines on more than 1 piece of ice per run. So if they double stack sentries and you have 1 Mongoose out, you're kind of screwed.
Yes.
But in Criminal, you normally have like a fairy or a femme installed anyway. So I figured, yeah, Mongoose seems quite cheap. Sounds
also,
quite
in
good.
Practice, there tend to be people who will throw down a sentry and then put a piece of end the run ice after it, just to the sentry to tax at the end of the run. Because usually it's harder to get through.
Yeah. But I saw a discussion, I think it was earlier today, about saying like, oh, do you think Mongoose is a good breaker? And so many people were like, well, why would you play Mongoose when you can play Mimic? It's like, well, Mimic's a fixed breaker for a start, Mongoose isn't. Mimic can get through, doesn't have the same kind of drawback of the 1 piece of ice per run that Mongoose does, but you need something like Data Sucker to supplement the Mimic, and then it's like that's kind of eating into your influence. So it's like, well, in theory, if you want to spend your influence on something else, Mongoose is actually a really good in-faction breaker. You don't have to worry about importing an Anarch breaker into a faction that is actually, in theory, the best at breaking sentries.
Yeah, I'd go with that.
And again, it just got me thinking, well, if you want to spend your influence on a Mimic, so it's normally 1 Mimic in Criminals and then maybe 2 Data Suckers.
Uh-huh.
So that's like 3 of your 15, so let's say 15 influence. Obviously there are Criminals or other factions with different influence totals, especially Ken with his 17. But it's like, well, that's three. So it takes you down to like 12 influence left. It's like, depends what you want to do with that 12 influence. If that's enough for what your game plan is with this deck, and if you need to spend more influence than 12, then obviously some cards have to come out. And like, where do you? I think because one of the main, I think this is the one of the problems with the community has when it comes to icebreakers is that they spend a lot of influence on importing the best icebreaker from the other factions, which obviously there's nothing wrong with that because each faction is designed to be good at the one specific.
But then it's getting more broad now.
Well, absolutely. I mean, stuff like Passport is like almost a primary criminal code gate breaker now, rather than importing something.
I've had bad times with Passport recently.
Really?
Yeah. It's not being my foray into criminal is just essentially criminals turning around and bitch slapping me.
Oh man.
Yeah, you can't access all those other servers. Like, oh, why would I even want it? God, criminals suck. And yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so then it's obviously people are spending a lot of influence on importing the breakers when you think, well, depending on what your game plan is, would that influence be better spent on events, hardware, or resources that enable you to do other things when you can still use your in-faction breakers? Specifically, like, a lot of the time with, like, the, well, Passport, Alias, and Breach, the Central Only Criminal one's a really good example of this. They're not economically the best cards, if you're going to get into numbers, but they're still all good breakers. They all struggle with, you know, certain numeric intervals, depending on how much you need to boost it. Like, what is it, like an Ice Wall, or no, something, there's, like, a really small barrier that Breach has to pay like almost 6 for, I think. But so they're not good against like certain ones like that, but they're still like fairly good breakers. Nothing wrong with using them. Obviously you can't use them on remotes, but then it's like, well, that frees up like all your influence to go elsewhere now. So I think the kind of the argument about, oh, you know, use this breaker is a bit flawed if you want to spend the influence elsewhere. But no, yeah, I mean, I think my main point for where and how to spend influence is always kind of, what is this deck not good at? What do I need to bring in from the other two runners or the other three corps, or even the neutral stuff that has influence? What do I need to bring in to make this deck work? So usually it's like, if I'm, well, because I typically never play Shaper, it's normally like I'll bring in like Maker's Eyes or R&D interfaces to kind of give that fact, give my criminals the R&D pressure they need, because obviously they're, again, their forte is hammering HQ.
Yeah.
Or with obviously like clone ship in for Anarch, because they're trashing lots of stuff all the time.
Yeah, I was going to say 90% of the stuff I bring in is recursion or draw.
Yeah.
It tends to be either a draw engine or a recursion engine, just because I play Anarch, and you're right, they just get rid of stuff.
Yeah. And even when it comes to like the corporations as well, like the, this is, again, minor grievance, but this is when people are going like, oh yeah, Wayland's terrible at the moment, because why would you use them to kill when you can kill in NBN? It's like, well,
Wayland's great, shut up.
I know,
You shut your, not you, I'm talking to the people who say that. You all shut your damn dirty mouths.
I mean, I've had a great time with Wayland, playing, especially my my Blue Sun deck, which is on Netrunner DB. It's stupidly called Drugs. Because it stands for Destroy, Rebuild Until God Shows. Because it's Scorched Earth to destroy. It's all the renovations, which is the rebuild. And then it runs one Orion, so you just basically fuck them around and then res Orion with your Oversight AI, which is just hilarious. But no, but then they say, like, oh yeah, because you can put the meat damage in NBN, which is good, because NBN has so much tagging that it means you can just splash in the meat damage and you're kind of there. But with Wayland, if you wanted to do that, then you kind of have to bring it the other way and splash in the tags. Or whatever else you think is going to shore up Wayland, because obviously like they have tons of barriers, but kind of their code gates are not as good. So you know, that's why you see loads of Tollbooth in Wayland. It's a big ice; it's a lot of taxing. And so yeah, I definitely think that's normally the first thing I look at, is like what is this deck? Because I normally start with just building in neutral and that faction cards when I build a deck. Then I think, like, all right, what am I lacking now? What do I need to put in? Like, do I have a decent barrier breaker? Cool, right, I'll go import that. Or do I need more HQ pressure? Right, cool, I'm gonna get some legworks in this deck or something like that.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like the first way that I see influence. It's kind of shoring up what I'm weak against and kind of making sure that I'm not too focused on something, because I I have had a tendency to be super laser pinpoint focused on certain deck archetypes, and
no,
I know, shocking
you
news.
And your OCD completely focused on one thing. I'm fairly sure you've got, like, you're on the autism spectrum somewhere.
I must be, yeah.
just for your need to have things complete.
Yeah.
And that's your ability to pinpoint precisely what I've taken out of alphabetical order in your shelves.
No, the reason for that is because this sounds even worse, but I know the pattern that the spines make up, so then I can see
what I mean, guys.
See when the title is out of order.
If you agree with me, just I don't know, tweet at us, tweet at Mark and tell him that he's got OCD.
Tell me that I need help.
Yeah, I've been telling him for years. He doesn't listen to me. it's worked out all right so far.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So, you got any other thoughts on oh man, dragging this wild stallion back to the topic at hand, any other thoughts on influence?
It's, yeah, I, you know what, I never even when I build a deck I don't think about influence until I actually have to.
Yeah.
Like, I just add the cards I want, and it's usually at the end of it, because I just add whatever I want to do to a deck. So I'm like, I'll add all three copies of Clone Ship, three copies of this, and then at the end I'll go, okay, I'm at something like 54 influence. I'm at 90 cards. What do I need to get down? You know, I can knock it down to, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
What can I get rid of? And then it is a case of just me tuning the deck to influence rather than letting influence rule what I put in it.
Yeah.
That's what I probably have to sell the issue. It's a shorter topic, because, yeah, you know, you will have to work around it, but...
What do you think to kind of big splashes versus kind of lots of smaller ones? Like, I obviously it depends on the deck, but
yeah, I would argue that there tends to be bigger splashes tend to be better, just simply because your deck tends to be more focused then.
Yeah.
So, I mean, don't get me wrong, I've had like lots of small splashes, lots of kind of, I call them bitty decks, just sort of like they have one or two tools and there are just lots of tools. But as a majority of things, like, I'd rather take, again, it's poorly put together now because of most wanted list, but I'd rather take three clone ships than, you know, a clone ship and a parasite and a something, you know, and
yeah,
it's yeah, it can be a bit, yeah, a bit of a pain.
Yeah. Exactly.
How about you? Are you a big influencer? Are you a small influencer?
I think, yeah, like you, it kind of depends on the deck. Like, just looking at my Leela deck that's in front of me now, all of my influence is three R&D interfaces, which is six, two Corrodas, which is another four, one Zoo, or Zool, depending on if you read the numbers, is another two, and then I have three influence on Desperado as well. Well, three influence on Desperado.
Yeah.
So it's kind
funny
of...
funny air quotes.
Yeah. So it's kind of four cards, or three cards, depending on how you look at it, that use up all the influence in the deck. Which is, you know, because I can do everything else out of blue for criminal, so it's like, well, I just import the couple of things I need. You know, a decent barrier breaker, I need just a backup code gate breaker because I'm using Rex as my primary, and I want to hammer R&D a lot because I've got legwork to do HQ. That's kind of all I need. But thinking about stuff like when I've built, or even like the food coats kind of decks that you see, and they use like 8 of their 15 influence on two Caprice, and it's like two huge splashes there. But then we have so many cards, and I think I've said this before, I've got so many cards and so many good cards in faction that you can get to like a decent 49 card deck for a corp, or 45 for a runner, and you can not have used any influence. And then it's like, oh cool, right, what do I swap out now? And I found that when I built HP decks before, it's kind of like all the ice is good and taxing, like all their assets are good money assets, their operations are good as well, their agendas obviously are going to be their agendas. And it's just like, well, I've got all this, I guess I'll put three Caprice in, that's 12 influence.
Yeah, and that's me done.
Yeah, three global food, right, that's all my influence there. But no, I think it's quite interesting. It's, when you see someone's deck and you kind of see their influence spread, it see kind of how kind of closely they stayed to their faction, and if it was kind of just huge things that they needed to bring in. Like, obviously, if you look at the kill decks that Hopscord and Nereth Hub are running at the moment, it's all their influence is three Scorch, three Traffic, and then if you're Hopscord, two influence on something else. If you're near a thub, to influence on something else. And it's like, that's three giant... It's like when I used to do a lot of, like, the early days when I did a lot of account siphon out of Anarch, and I'd have, like, 12 influence was just through account siphon.
Just three siphons, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. That was pretty much all my influence, and then maybe three little things. just to add up the influence, but it's just like, yeah, this deck wants to be an account siphon deck. It's going to be that kind of deck. Right, 3 account siphons. That's all. That's my influences. Now I'll work around that.
I don't know.
But I like the just like little surprise splashes as well. Like I think the one that I've seen a lot recently is a Cortex Lock in MBN. Just like that tiny little surprise 2 influence thing that could have been spent on anything, but it was on a nice like piece of ice you just wouldn't expect, and then you run into it and you. Well, it's like my me running into the snare out of HB the other night. It's just like just wasn't expecting it. That's a nice bit of influence spend. Didn't expect.
You just sat there like, where did that come from?
Damn you, Corset! But no, yeah, I like those as well. Like when you can completely throw people off because you've got in that one or two things that they weren't expecting. That kind of just, and sometimes it is just to, you know, if you want to actually round out your influence and use it all up, and just putting in those, just maybe one or two cards that just finishes it off, and it's just something completely random that actually ends up working out really well for you. Mm. Yeah.
Ah, right then. That's probably enough of us talking about influence. I have very little more to say on the subject.
Yeah.
Shall we do, because we've been a bit remiss and we've been away for a while, shall we do some reader mail?
Yes, I believe we have a bunch of it to get through.
Yes, we do.
Thanks everyone for getting in touch. We shall now catch you up on all of the mail that we have.
So we'll get rid of the ones asking us to have sex. Thanks, but no thanks. It's fine, but... You know.
I know, the tension's palpable, but we like it that way.
I meant with the readers, not with each other. But hey, if that's what you... Thanks, Mark. You ass.
Oh, it just shows you where my mind went, doesn't it?
Has it been a long day? Has it been a long day, baby? Oh, right. So who's going first?
I think you've got the first one.
The one from Kyla.
Yes.
So we got an email from Kyla from Victoria, and he says, "Hi guys, after listing some of your thematic deck builds, I was inspired and came up with the following, presumably horrible but fun theme deck. It's called Child Labour, and I thought you guys might like it. Hopefully it's not too offensive an idea. And we'll link it in the description, but... Ooh, I like this. I like it a lot. It's essentially Chaos Theory going to work. which made me chuckle immediately. It's... You know, he's made the classic mistake of including Astrolabe instead of Monolith, but I'll let it slide because, you know, it's hard. I understand Monolith is a terrible thing to try and get out for things. But no, I like the deck. As a thematic deck, it's ridiculous and funny.
Yeah.
It's in no way tournament legal at the minute. But, yeah, it's... I don't know. I don't know what else to say about it. It's a surprising mix of stuff that I haven't seen in a while. So, like, Cloak and Dagger in there, which is something you don't really see. So much as, you know, anymore with all the stealth breakers.
Yeah.
Ladies in there, because, hey, lady. lots of recursion and a bunch of anarch cards to make money and lose clicks, and yeah, it's pretty funny.
So the main two are Adjusted Chronotype and Hard at Work. So you you gain your 2 credits by losing a click with Hard at Work, and then you gain the click back with Adjusted Chronotype. And you've just gained 2 clicks for being hard at work, but also
and,
messing
and
with
having
your DNA.
Yeah, true, and having a day job as well. So,
yes.
Yeah, you can spend 3 clicks, well, 4 technically, to gain 10. So yeah, the idea of this tiny girl going to work at like Dixon's or something.
I just have the idea of her just like as she's walking around.
Does Dixon's
at work.
Exist anymore?
I think it's just Curry's and PC World that are now Curry's PC World. It's incredibly UK centric now, but I think Dixon's is gone.
Man, I'm so old.
I think they went into what's the word? Not submission. Administration.
No, please. No more. I give up. You can have the shop. Well. So it does say a lot about where your mind is this evening.
Thinking about having sex with you and being submissive.
Oh, right. Moving on.
Swiftly.
Thank you very much, Kyler. If you come up with any more decks, please send them along. Just, you know, if it's going to be a Chaos Theory, there is the unwritten rule that Monolith is included. But yeah, thank you very much for writing into us. It was nice. It's nice to have emails.
Yeah. Moving on, we have one from D. Flint, And this is about me and my assumptions of the M1, M2, M3 for Sonny's Breakers. He or she says, your comments on Sonny's Breakers being named after military vehicles was a bit off. The M1 is the Abrams tank, the M2 Bradley, and the M3 Devers, I think I'm pronouncing that right, and they're variants of the same vehicle. There was an M3, and then brackets, the M3 Medium was the Lee in the US service, Grant in the UK. The M3 tank was, the M3 light tank was the Stuart. So it gets really confusing, apparently. And then, weirdly, the Sherman tank is the M4. And a Striker is also a wheeled kind of APC vehicle. And then the Shrike was a pre-World War II bomber by Curtiss. So they all have kind of... All the names do come from military vehicles. The M1, M2, M3, not so much defining what their vehicle type was, though. But maybe FFG have named them after kind of future armor. He also says, he or she also says that doesn't think that many people have twigged that Sherlock go with Hudson. These are all the Byroid eyes from HB. And Hudson, for people who don't know, is the housekeeper, Sherlock Holmes' housekeeper. And finishes off by pondering if there'd ever be a Moriarty ice, or if Moriarty would even be an ID.
Oh,
and I've
got
to say,
so.
I wanted to read this because it was obviously my assumptions about the M1, M2, M3, but also for the completionist in me, goes, hell yes, there should be a Moriarty ice. And yes. It should probably do something ridiculous.
It would be an arc, and you'd just be...
Oh, an ID?
Yeah.
I could see Moriarty, yeah.
Of course it would be. If it's... Moriarty is... Well, I suppose... Yeah, it's more anarch than it is criminal, I would say. Personally.
Yeah.
But hey-ho. Yeah, that's a... I hadn't put the Hudson with it. I definitely got the Holmes. The Hudson, I was like, oh, yeah!
What do you think if Moriarty was an ice? What do you think it would do?
You see, I just don't think it being an ice, because if Hudson and Sherlock are ice... then it's got to be a runner to stop the runner, surely.
I guess.
That's my logic. But yeah. It'd be a sentry and it would kill you. That's what it would be. It would be out of Wayland and it would kill you.
It'd be some ridiculous thing like the runner loses two clicks and falls over a waterfall.
the runner loses two clicks, the both decks are swept off the table into a bucket of water.
Yeah, throw a glass of water at your opponent.
I just have to constantly refer to it as Moriarty, because that's a joke that a few people will get, hopefully.
Deflint finishes by saying, anyway, keep up the good work. I really enjoy your podcast. It keeps me entertained on the way to and from work. So thank you very much for getting in. And I mumbled my way through it, but it is very confusing. The military vehicles, they're really... weird.
We just got schooled. Like, that's what it was. That was
properly
someone laying,
schooled, yeah.
That was laying down some hot knowledge on us. We also got one from my favourite person ever. favourite vegetable. He, she, it, carrot. Chuffbot, who is in response to episode 19. Chuffbot here, delivering your recommended daily amount of veggies. If Archangel ends up being Mark's Yoko Ono, I'll consider that a reasonable end. The card is awesome unless the runner's board is blank, in which case they've got bigger problems. Which is a fair point. I may have torn into you a little too hard about Archangel.
Just a tad, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Also, Spark is my new baby, because the only thing better than hitting a runner in the brain is hitting them in the wallet. Here's some bullshit you can do. 1. Reverse counts is completely hilarious once they stop checking all your emotes. I've undone prepaid Kate's Lucky Find before and had to fight the giggles the entire time. Which is very true. 2. Cities of Valence is amazing. I'll give you a moment to look that card up. Do you remember now? once the runner's broke, this becomes completely disgusting. And yeah, it's Cities of Valence is the one that gives you a tag unless you pay money at the start of your go, isn't it?
It's 5 to res, 3 to trash, NBN asset, and it's, give the runner a tag at the start of the turn unless they pay 1 credit. And the abilities stack with every single one you have out.
So much fun. He says, plop it down, res it once you get them to low/broken, toss a pop-up or a special offer or Archangel in front of it for even more misery. And you combine it with Information Overload, All Seeing Eye, Close Accounts, make you no friends. And, and 3, on the jankiest side of things, yes, jankier than City Surveillance, Rex Campaign. One credit res, so you can risk it aggressively and not care if they trash it. It makes you a hedge fund two turns later, or alternatively makes Valencia very sad.
Oh, because it removes a bad publicity, doesn't it?
Yeah, I had to look up what Rex campaign did. It's yeah, it was. I forgot how fun that card can be. But yeah, Spark is number one, super best. I love it. Also, rebranding team is terrible, and Spark doesn't need it. No arguments from me.
I think rebranding team will have its day. I'm still holding out hope.
Really?
We'll see.
Is this going to be another Archangel situation?
I was right about Archangel. That thing is mean.
Well, that's debatable. I've never seen it work. Quiet, you. Quiet. But yes, thank you very much, Chuffbot. You lovely carrot, you.
Cool. I think you have the next piece as well, Steph.
Sorry, yeah. I was having a drink.
That's all right. I did the same thing. We're very synchronized in our drinking tonight.
I was like, ah! Someone from Damien. Is that the next one?
Yeah, Damien.
Okay.
Hang on a second.
Yeah?
It's a ridiculous alarm going off.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. We'll give it a second.
Oh, fuck's sake. My love.
Cool. Right, it's gone.
My darling. No, I'm singing now. Oh dear. Please don't put that in the episode. I don't want that. Mark, please.
No, I probably won't.
Mark, look at me. Look at me through
I do. I look at your picture all the time while I talk to you. It's not weird.
Oh god. I don't. I miss him. I miss him so much. I'm trying to stroke his chubby face.
Looking smug holding your beer stein.
Well, god, yeah. Right, the next email is from Damien O'Dea. I think that's pronounced right. He's got his nickname as Odie, which is cool because that's a Peanuts reference. No, Garfield reference. Sorry, two comics from my childhood. Garfield reference. Otherwise he'd be Snoopy. Either way, moving on. On episode 20, Independent Thinking, he starts, "Hi, Nerd Runners," or based on last episode, should that be Nude Runners? Which, it's been a while, so I don't
know. Oh, that would be... because we were talking about you running out of the bath with your towel wrapped around your neck.
Oh, yes. Cloak. Oh, god. We'll move on. So he says, "Thanks to the lovely boys from Last Click. I found about your cast and really enjoy it. So you found yourself a new listener from sunny or not sunny Australia. It was 38 degrees C today and it's not even summer yet." Yeah, apparently Australia is actually melting.
Really?
Well, I don't mean like I was being, you know, over the top, but it's been ridiculously hot there this summer for them. Or winter for us. Man, the world's weird. Anyway, corps that don't care about their employees going on strike should also include custom biotics that nobody except Edie plays, I reckon. Go on, blank my identity, I'll just reach over to the Jinteki player's discard and slot in a couple of snares, eh? He's only just starting to get into the deck building from Data and Destiny right now, but really likes New Angeles Sol. Run aside, Adam's speaking to him, and thinks that a cyber-enhanced Bioroid could be strangely silly fun to play around. Play around with the downsides of his directives, so looking forward to trying that. Yeah, I have had a hell of a time trying to get Adam to work. I just hate him.
Really?
It's just so much more to think about, and I don't like thinking about it. It's like, oh yeah, I've got these stupid directives. I just end up, anyway, that's a conversation for another time. And he finishes with his latest jank, which is porting the NEH Turtlebacks team sponsorship across to Industrial Genomics. Sansan scored out a claim retirement the other day, triggering 2x team sponsorship, so installed a face-up shock from Archives into a new server for 2 credits, and then installed the second face-up shock over the top of it, trashing the face-down shock that we all knew was there back into Archives. Last click, install over the second shock with another asset, and end up with 2 face-downs back in the Archives, and a +1 agenda point, and 1 credit. So, yeah, that's pretty janky.
That is.
I like that. Cheers, Damien. That is a lot of fun with Industrial Genomics. I keep meaning to go and look at Industrial Genomics. I've never played it.
Yeah, me too. Like I keep seeing a lot of interesting stuff that you can do with it, especially forcing, because the runner has to get into Archives and check stuff. So obviously you want to be putting like shock and CQ in there just to make it extra pointy and prickly. And then you just play out lots of ridiculous assets that they can't trash. Like you put like hostile infrastructure down to give them a net damage tax every time they trash something of yours, and you put down other ridiculous things to stop them drawing up cards. Or you can do so much interesting stuff with it, and I do mean to try it as well. And pro tip, if you want to try Industrial Genomics, try it with subliminal messaging, because you pull them back out of your archives at the start of your turn. And then you can, you know, either use them for extra credits, or you just dump them face down in archives and constantly keep cycling them, which is hilarious, which I really want to try. That's the combo I want to try and get working in IG. Cool. I've got the next one. So this is from my buddy Jim from Tuesday Night Group. And he says,
sorry, it felt appropriate.
That's fine. Hey, guys.
Jim.
Hey guys, firstly, love the Nerd Runners podcast, which is always important to say. Keep up the good work. Secondly, this is the list that he was using the other night, and he promised to send it in for the last couple of weeks. I'm finally glad he's done it. And basically, I'll link it in the description, but it's the main substitute from the published deck list is changing two pop-up windows for private to two private contracts, and then the deck's basically good to go. And he says, he finishes with, I still haven't forgiven you about that R&D run, and I never will. I'll get to that in one moment.
I look forward to this.
So the deck is a really interesting deck, partly because it uses Making News, the Corsair NBN identity, and it uses the two recurring credits well. And the big thing about it is it runs three restructured data pools, which people may have forgotten because it's a 5-3 agenda in NBN. And it's not a 3-2. So the scored ability on it is click and then trace two. If successful, give the runner a tag, which obviously you boost your trace four with your recurring credits, and you just keep spamming that to tag the runner if you manage to score this. If you don't manage to score this and the runner takes it, you play Media Blitz, and then you activate that ability from the runner's score area and do it anyway.
Hey!
Well, aside from Keegan Lane, who's obviously going to trash your stuff if you remain tagged and start running on things, the other interesting card in there is Bad Times, which I've never seen anyone run.
Across it once, and it's awful.
For people who don't remember Bad Times, it's a four-cost neutral operation, and you play it only if the runner is tagged, and it reads, the runner's memory limit is reduced by two until the end of the turn. So you double Bad Times someone after they've been tagged and clear out their board. Which is just nasty stuff. So yeah, really cool. I'll post that as well. Also, the username is Herod1204. So I guess this is
really
So I believe this is your Edward Kim.
Jesus,
deck.
It's a small world.
How about that? Well, after all,
tell him thanks from me because that Edward Kim deck is kind of fun.
Yeah. Well, that's
a double shout out. Completely unintentional.
I noticed it when you were talking about it earlier. I thought, you know, I'll save this for later. Surprise deck.
Nice.
But no, that's cool. So you actually got two decks featured on the podcast. It's cool. So the R&D running question. And I was going to text you this, but I wanted to just kind of tell it on the show anyway.
Naturally.
So I was playing my Leela deck, and I'd really early scored two Global Food, which is obviously just 4 points for me. Jim was getting properly set up, so he'd the main problem was there was an Archangel over R&D, and I hit that and didn't go well for me. I think I lost my Desperado from it, so I wasn't happy about that. So then I thought, you know what, fuck it, I'll go special order my Fem, I'll Fem it, and I can get back into R&D, because I was trying to keep the R&D lot going. So I did that, and Jim, smart play, he overwrited that Archangel. And I was like, fuck, well, I lost my Fem token. So I ran it again, and he'd overrun it with another Archangel. So he started pinging stuff back to my hand, like security testing. He was very, very reluctant to put the Fem back into my hand so I could re-Fem it. But because it's because you have to do it, I thought, you know, if I run this enough times, the Fem will go back into my hand and it will refresh, which is actually a really funny play. But then I then decided to security test onto Archives to get some money because I was super poor. Because obviously my Desperado had gone, I'd barely drawn into any economy, and him being stinking rich thanks to his private contracts and a 2-ice-deep server, res an assassin on me, and he bounced a Corroda back into my hand as well with Archangel, so I lost that to the net damage from assassin, and then he trashed something else on my board as well. Just, oh, for fuck's sake, okay, right, I'm really down and out now. And then he got wise to the fact that I was just running through the Archangel unopposed because I had nothing out for it to bounce back into my hand. So he puts a wall of static in front of it. It's like, fuck, right, well, I've lost my Corroda. I've got one more in the deck. I've not drawn another special order. Okay, this could be interesting. And in my hand, I had the Fem, which had been put back in there by the Archangel. I had an R&DI, and I eventually drew into... Well, not eventually, but a couple of turns later, drew into an inside job. And then the gears on my head started to turn. I'm like, you know what? If I have 14 credits, I can get in to... I think it was 15, actually, because I needed one to bypass the subroutine on Archangel. So I was like, you know what? I'll play it cool. I'll play it very, very cool. And so I just gain money for a few turns, thinking, you know, if I don't pressure anything, he thinks he's got R&D locked down. If I'm not drawing cards, he'll assume I'm not drawing a Corroder or anything, so I can, we can just leave that. We, you know, we've got a plan. So I got to 20 credits, and then I installed the Femming the Archangel, because obviously the R&DI would get bounced, so I couldn't really Fem the Wall of Static. I installed the R&D interface, and then I inside jobbed over the Wall of Static, bypassed the subroutine on Archangel, accessed two cards, and the top one was a restructured data pool for the win.
That's good. And that's a good one.
Not only that, but the next card down was the third global food. And not only that, he was so steaming because his deck only runs seven agendas, of which he'd scored one restructured data pool, two global food were in my score area, which meant there was one more global food, two more restructured data pools, and a Beal somewhere in the deck. I think he said he had the Beal in hand as well, maybe. So, like, R&D was not a promising place for me to run, little did I know, but I still, like, it was the funniest, and this, it felt like the kind of move you see at the end of, like, a Team Covenant video, of, like, a championship play, and Stephen Woolley just goes crazy about it, like, she's like, oh my god, he did it! Oh my god! I just felt so, so awesome doing it. It's just like, I honestly can't, and as well, because if I'd have It just boggles my mind as well, because if I'd have waited one more turn to do that run, I'd have hit the global food and only got to 6 points. So by making it at the exact time, I got the 3 points I needed to close out the game. It was just ridiculous. And that's why he'll never forgive me for that R&D run.
Understandable, as far as I'm concerned. Understandable.
And last up, we have a very interesting piece of... we won't say reader or listener mail, because I'm pretty sure they don't know about the podcast. And this was sent to the podcast email address and not through the website. So somehow they'd entered nerdrunnerspodcast@gmail.com. Little plug. And sent
really?
Us this, and sent us this
They're listening
email.
To this podcast, and you think that's...
Well, refresh their memory. It's been a while since they've heard the email address.
Okay.
And this it read, "Hello, this is Jones Carly. I will like to know if you do kitchen/bathroom renovation, and do you accept major types of credit cards for payment?" And then, like, six dots. I was like, okay, this is pretty random. The problem was as well, like, the email was called, the subject was renovation. So I'm lucky, I opened it thinking, oh, it came to Nerdrunners, it's called renovation, must be about the renovations.
Nope.
Obviously not the kind of renovations we were expecting. So I put this on Facebook, but I thought, for obviously anyone who's not in the UK group, this is it. I'm still a little bit pleased with myself about this, but it was just so daft, I felt I had to do it. Because it started out being, it was just going to be like a very quick email, just be like, haha, you know, renovations in Netrunner, haha. But then it kind of morphed and morphed the more I kind of added to it, and then it eventually read, "Hi Jones Carly, I'm afraid kitchen/bathroom renovation is not something we specialise in. However, if you're looking for information regarding our Hollywood, Underway and Oaktown renovation projects, then we can definitely help. It is public knowledge after all. Unfortunately, we don't accept credit cards. Instead, we prefer to deal in hedge fund and beanstalk royalty based transactions. Sorry we couldn't help more, but know that we are truly building a better world for you and your future." Signed, Elizabeth Mills. And then I changed my signature to read, "Sent from my pad."
That is possibly... It's quite funny. It's quite funny. But, yeah. There's going to be one very confused woman somewhere. Going, what the... I don't want to...
Just their kitchen...
Hollywood? Why do I need to know about Hollywood?
Their kitchen and bathroom are in tatters because the last workmen didn't finish the job. And she's like,
yeah.
What the fuck is this? But I was very, very quietly pleased with myself about that.
As you should be. As you should be, my friend. Cool. Well, I think that's everything. Thank you very much, everyone, for the reader mail. And keep them coming, because we do like getting it, because it inflates my ego no end. And also is. Mark's, probably.
Yeah, it's nice. Genuinely nice to hear from you guys. And obviously, the janky decks. We'll list all the ones you've talked about today. the double deck shout out for Jim there as well. And yeah, if you've got any other kind of interesting decks or cards that you've been using, obviously there's really interesting stuff coming up in the Mumbed cycle. So yeah, let us know if you've got on with any cool combinations of that. Let us know how you get on with stuff, or if you've got any questions, comments, feedback, general ponderings, anything that you want to send through, it's nerdrunnerspodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter. I'm @MarcusFriend and Steph is @HouseOfMoose. We post the podcast on Reddit and a bunch of other places, so you can find it there. What else is there? Oh yeah, NetrunnerDB. My username is MarcusFriend and Steph is Ren, which is RYNN. We have been very bad about posting deck lists recently, so we should really do that.
I have an excuse.
Yeah. I think my problem is that I keep seeing like all these great deck lists that go up, like tournament winning, and mine are just like, I had fun with this on Tuesday. So I should really have more confidence in my decks because they're not that bad. And yeah, I think that's pretty much about it. The only other thing I was going to mention today is we've had a few people email in about asking us to start a Patreon for the podcast so they can donate a bit of money to us each week or each episode, depending on, I guess, how we'd set it out.
Which is incredibly flattering.
Yeah, we couldn't believe it when we read that. So thank you very much for that. It is something we've started to think about now. And if you have any strong feelings for or against us starting a Patreon, let us know. It would be quite nice to cover the costs of hosting for the website, and it'd be quite nice if we could put it on like SoundCloud and stuff like that. So all the additional monthly costs that we'd have. But yeah, if you have any feelings towards us starting a Patreon, let us know.
It has always been my dream to be able to pay for a pizza by doing something ridiculous on the internet. So. Yeah, I can't not say that some of the money, the first money we get if we did a Patreon, would go towards a pizza.
And then after that, it would be hosting costs and a new mic for you.
Yeah, what's wrong with my mic? Yeah, it is shit. That was a joke, though. I know I have a pretty piss poor setup here, but hey ho.
It's something we're looking into, and if you guys have any feelings about that, then let us know. It's not something we have to do, but it's something we might do if you're up for it and you know you would like to donate a little bit of money towards the show. Otherwise, you know, I'm quite happy to chug along and kind of pay for stuff for the time being. But obviously, every little donation would be fantastic if it's something you would like to do.
Yes.
Cool. I think that's pretty much everything then. Man, this has been a good getting back into Netrunner type podcast.
Yeah, I'm going to go and lie down somewhere and take some pills. Good pills. Doctor prescribed pills. It's nothing bad, I promise. Oh, Lord. Well,
on that note.
Thank you very much for listening, guys. And I guess we will see you next time.
Okay. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Yeah, I have been enjoying the text. I'm sorry I've been a bit spotty about replying.
Nah, it's fine. I'm just kind of sporadically texting you things. I know you're ill. I know you're phasing in and out of reality. I just thought, I should tell Steph this. At least figuring that you could read it and it'll brighten your day.
It does. It does. Because I'm like, what the fuck is he talking about? And then I look at cards and go, oh, that's interesting. Yeah. And then go back to sleep.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, oh, cool.